From Birmingham, Alabama, the heart of the South, this is the heart and soul of rock and roll. Brought to you worldwide by Birmingham Record Collectors Club, dedicated to the collecting and preservation of music through lasting friendships. BRC is the largest group of its kind in the United States and produces the largest CD, record, and music memorabilia show and convention in the southeastern U.S. every third weekend in August. Our 31st annual show is next August and will again be at the Gardendale Civic Complex near Birmingham, Alabama. Now, with thanks to Birmingham's own Bobby Mizell and his pumpin' piano, welcome in, you rock and rollers. Welcome again to the heart and soul of rock and roll, presented by the Birmingham Record Collectors. Rockin' Ray here, and as your host, I'm pleased to offer a very special edition of our program. Each year on the third weekend in August, the Birmingham Record Collectors hold our annual record show. It attracts dealers and customers from across the country and from several foreign countries. This year, due to the calendar, our show will fall on August 15th and 16th, and it's a special one, because this is our 31st annual show. Plus, we're adding a concert on Saturday night. This Shower of Stars concert will feature several acts with connections to the famous Muscle Shoals sound. Dan Penn and Spooner Oldham, performers and songwriters who've just completed a tour of Europe, will be performing with us. Travis Womack and his Snake Man Band, also veterans of literally thousands of recording sessions with top recording artists in Muscle Shoals, will be on stage with special guest Donnie Fritz, who will also be with Dan Penn and Spooner Oldham. Another longtime recording veteran, Donnie Fritz is going to add some really interesting music to the show. Then it's Elvis Week, and we have a very special feature with a special appearance by internationally famous Elvis Presley music performer Elvis Wade. He actually performed for Elvis, and the king of rock and roll gave him a standing ovation. Wow, what a lineup that's going to be. Listen, at the end of the show, I'll tell you about how to order tickets so you can be there and take it all in. But now, yet another addition to that particular Saturday night, August 15th. It's going to be the Birmingham Record Collectors Hall of Fame to honor Alabama natives who have distinguished themselves in the recording, radio, and music fields as performers here and around the world. Well, many of the headliners I've mentioned are already among that special group of people, and during the concert, we're going to be honoring three new members. Now, those special people are the focus for this edition of the Heart and Soul of Rock and Roll. First up is Miss Sandy Posey. She's a native of Jasper and is best known for her three huge rock and roll hits during the mid-60s, Born a Woman, Single Girl, and I Take It Back. These are part of a half dozen of her pop chart successes. But she actually has three careers in the music business. Before those hits, she was first known as the prototypical backup singer, performing background vocals for Elvis Presley on several of his hit recordings. She also sang behind Percy Sledge, Bobby Goldsboro, Tommy Rowe, Bobby Bear, Jimmy Hughes, Del Reeves, and Joe Tex, among others. Then, after her rock and roll career in the early 70s, she became a country music star, featuring 11 hits that appeared on the country music charts. Sandy will also be performing on the Shower of Stars concert Saturday night. We caught up with Sandy up in Nashville and talked to her about those early days before her first big hit for MGM went all the way to number 12 on the pop music charts.
And a lot of people don't realize all the work you did as a backup singer. And you sang for, Elvis. You sang for some of the top people out there. That was really a career before your career. And, of course, that's one of the reasons that we want to induct you into the Hall of Fame, is because that you have had such a great career, not just the hits, because you had some great hits, but everything that you've done down through the years.
And my aunt called me one day, and she said, Sandy, she knew how bad, I guess, that I wanted to, and I barely knew her very well. And she said, there's a man at such and such TV station who is really in the business. Why don't you go over and meet him? So I was so shy then because I didn't know Jesus like I do now. Mm-hmm. And my cousin went with me, and we met him, and that he liked my voice. He got me on singing Good Morning from Memphis, but I was so scared. I only lasted 2 weekends. And so, anyway, Herschel Wigington, who is one of the biggest backup singers in Nashville, right. And that was on Hee Haw, and that's the group that I sang with, that we did all of our sessions with in Nashville. So anyway, long before Nashville, they were just like me, singing everywhere they could. And they came to Memphis, and they were called to do a session there, but they didn't have another girl. So one of the guys called this guy that worked at the TV station and said, do you know anyone? He said, do I know someone? Yes, I do. And so they let me come and sing that night. I had never sang in a background in the studio before in my whole life.
Wow.
This was long before the hits.
Sure.
And so Herschel was just flabbergasted. He said, you've never done background? I said, never.
You're one of those people who has had success, but not like many that had one-time success. So many one-hit wonders, as they're called. What is the secret to your having hit after hit after hit?
There was no secret. I think it was the musicians that I had, the songs, first of all,
sure.
That I was able to, not me, but a publisher. This is really where I got my big break. A publisher from Nashville came to Memphis, and I told him that I was a singer. And when I found the right song, what I thought was a hit, that I was going to be recording there too. And it was Born a Woman. And he said, I have a song I think you'd be interested in, and I'm going down to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and do a demo session. Would you like to demo it? Well, the producer who owned that studio was there. Well, his name is Chips Moman.
Yes.
And the other guy's name was Gary Walker, who worked for a huge publishing company out of New York, but he worked in Nashville. So he came over to show Chip some songs, who had just recorded the Gentry's number one hit, Keep On Dancing. And so Chips played him the demo. He wanted to make sure I could sing before he invited me to do the demo session. And he liked my voice, and we went down to most shows and did the demo. And when I brought it back, I played it for Chips Moman, who is a producer too. He went crazy over it. He said, I believe this is so different. I believe this is a hit. And I said, well, you know, Chips, I said, it's either going to be a big record or it's going to be the biggest flop ever. And I said, I want to take a chance on it too. So we got the musicians together. At that time, Keep On Dancing was all he had, and he was looking for another artist and some more songs. So we went to another studio, which was High Records.
Yes.
You probably heard of it.
Yes.
We went over there, and that's where we recorded Born a Woman. And that's where he started getting his group together that recorded all those hits, including Presley. Then he went and pitched it to he and Gary Walker, who knew Jim Fenno at MGM, pitched the song. And I think Gary Walker is the one that talked Jim Fenno in taking a chance on it. And, well, now, it didn't just happen overnight. It had to be promoted for about, I don't know, 6 months to a year. And Jack Grady, who was a huge disc jockey out of Memphis, he promoted it. And it broke out. It's Madison.
Okay.
Madison, Wisconsin,
okay.
First. And then it just spread all over the place from there. So that was the beginning.
It makes no difference if you're rich or poor, or if you're smart or dumb. A woman's place in this old world is under some man's thumb. And if you're born a woman, you're born to be hurt. You're born to be stepped on, lied to, cheated on, and treated like dirt. Woman's lot is to give and give and go on giving. A woman's got to love and lose and go on living.
want to get your take on the fact that you have been grouped with other women who have done songs that have had a part in the women's movement. And certainly, not only your first song, but your second hit. And they've talked about you and Helen Reddy. And, of course, Leslie Gore. And in talking with Leslie, what she said is that she didn't really plan that to be a women's lib song, you know, that you don't own me.
Right. Well, she took the words out of my own mouth because I was fixing to say that myself. It wasn't planned at all. But Martha Sharp, who wrote Born a Woman and Single Girl, she was really, you know, high on. And I want to tell you a story about Born a Woman.
Okay.
She's so negative and hated men so bad that the last verse of Born a Woman was so negative, he told her. He was smart enough. I don't know how he knew it. But
this is Chips now.
Yeah. He was smart enough to know. He said, Martha, if you'll go back in and change the last verse on that song and make it more positive, then we'll record it and it'll be a hit. And she did what he said. She was nobody like me and just happened to write Born a Woman. That's her first hit also. But anyway, that's, and then, yeah, she wrote Single Girl. Chip said, won't you write another song? So she wrote Single Girl. And then I wanted to mention that because of Buddy Bowie, he wrote I Take It Back. That was just as big as Born a Woman and Single Girl. And then I had What a Woman to Love Won't Do that went to number 30. I'd like to have a 30.
A lot of artists would love to have. Yeah.
That's the one my husband says he remembers the most because he lived in Michigan. He lived in, where they had the big bass, you know, and Motown and all that going.
Sure.
So they played What a Woman Love Won't Do more than they did in the... He didn't even remember hearing Single Girl.
Is that right?
Yeah, he remembered What a Woman Love Won't Do, and a lot of people do, and I'm amazed that they do.
What a woman in love won't do.
Sandy Posey, Jasper, Alabama native, wonderful person, and boy, what a singer. Again, we'll be inducting Sandy during the Shower of Stars concert Saturday night, August 15th, at the Gardendale Civic Center, and she'll also be performing during that concert. Our thanks to Sandy for sitting down with us to discuss her long and successful career.
Internet Radio, BRC.
Hey, rock and roll music fans, Rockin' Ray here. Hey, if you like the music on the heart and soul of rock and roll, we've got another treat for you. It's the Rock and Roll Radio Reunion with yours truly. Right here, produced by BRC, and you'll find it right here on the website. It's a time tunnel trip backwards, 50 years. We'll be playing music from the early 60s all the way up to this month, 1964. Join us, a new show each month, right here on BRC Radio. You're gonna love it. You've got the heart and soul of rock and roll. BRC Radio. Here on the heart and soul of rock and roll, the second inductee in this year's Hall of Fame is Hackleburg, Alabama native, the Southern gentleman, Mr. Sonny James. Sonny charted 72 country hits, 21 of those were number one country chart hits. But this is the song that made many of us remember Sonny from the first. His national number one hit, staying on the charts an amazing 21 weeks. That's 5 months. Wow. Sonny James sings Young Love.
They say forever, boy and girl, there's just one love in this whole world, and I know I found mine. The heavenly touch of your embrace tells me no one could take your place ever in my heart. Young love. Kiss from your sweet lips will tell me that your love is real, and I can that it's true. We will vow to one another, there will never be another love for you or for me. Young love, first love, filled with true devotion. Young love, our love, we share with deep emotion.
Sonny is now 87 years old. He developed voice problems back in the 1980s, and he isn't able to get out much. But one of his close friends is Gary Robel. Gary sang with Sonny as one of the Southern Gentlemen backup singers. Gary brings a special perspective to the life and career of Sonny James, because they were together almost constantly for the glory years of Sonny's country career. The Birmingham Record Collectors Club invited Gary Robel to be interviewed back in July at our monthly meeting. And here's a portion of that interview.
I mean, I was with Sonny 7 years and did all of those things. It was all part of his second career. So how long can I talk? Let me go back. How did we meet? I guess the first question I'm always asked is, how did we meet Sonny? 15 months after we had arrived in Nashville and we were going through this period of time, our first tenor, my brother-in-law, fellow that he worked for, said, "Boy, you're good. I've got a friend. I'd like for my friend to hear you sing." Well, okay. So we set up an appointment on a Saturday morning at 9:30. Okay, this is probably in December of 63, I would say. And we don't know who the fellow is. We show up at his apartment in the Melrose area. And we introduce ourselves, and he introduces himself. And he says, "Well, come on, sit down." And he starts asking questions and a question and a question and a question. He said, "Well, why don't you sing for me?" Oh, okay, so pitch pipe. I was the guy that carried the pitch pipe. We sang something. He said, "Ooh, sing another one." Sang another one. And I don't know how many we sang. When we got through, Archie Campbell said,
"Oh, wow.
You boys are good enough to be in the Grand Ole Opry." And the Jordanaires were so busy at that time, they wanted off. And 2 weeks later, we replaced the Jordanaires as the Grand Ole Opry. So the first time we ever stood in front of with a big microphone, we sang in churches back then, okay? And with a band was the first time we were around the Opry. And so we did Swing Down, Sweet Chariot, and we did This Old House. We went out that night, and we did Kalijah, and we got 11 encores. And we had no idea that Hank Williams had written a song. And of course the encores came because Hank Williams had written it and he'd been gone for 10, 11 years. We didn't know that. We just learned Kalijah. And because of that experience on that night, then we started being approached. We got approached by one man and he came up to me and he said, "I've been listening to you boys on the Opry and I'd like you to work for me. I tell you what, I'll give you a station wagon and you tell me how much money you need. And you just show up at my shows and you boys got a job." And I said, "Well, Mr. Entertainer, where would we expect to work?" And I said, "Where would we expect to work?" And he said, "Oh, you'll work, we'll do fairs and auditoriums and clubs." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't think we could do that. We've never been in a club. I can't do that." And he poked me in the chest, and I'll never forget it. He said, "I'll tell you what, boy, you'll never make it in this business." And he turned around and walked away. And you go from that. You know how it is as a young man? What was I then, 22? You go away from that going, "Well, is that what we have to do to sing?" You're just saying that, you know, the good angel, the bad angel, you know, they get fighting. And 2 weeks later, this other fellow comes up to me and he says, "You know, I've been listening to you boys and I've been trying to put together a second career. And I'd like to talk to you about working with me." And I said, "And you are?" And he said, "Well, my name is Sonny James." And I said, "Well, I'm not familiar with you, Mr. James." Now, maybe some of you know why in Endicott, New York, we weren't familiar with country singer Sonny James. And he said, "Well, my big record was in 56, 57. It was Young Love." And I said, no, sir, it wasn't. That was Tab Hunter. That's what they played in my hometown.
Yep.
Now, between the two of them, according to Ken Nelson's book, 90 plus 3 years, who was the top Capitol man, and he wrote the book when he was 93 or something. In his book, Ken Nelson says that between Tab and Sonny, Young Love sold 5 million copies. That doesn't surprise me. But anyway, I asked Sonny then, after calling him a liar, I said, isn't that a great story? I mean, no, it wasn't. That was, can you imagine saying that to Sonny? And I said, well, Mr. James, where would we expect to work if we went with you? And he said, well, you work auditoriums and some movie theater things, places where, he said, I'll tell you this, you'll never work at a place where you'll be embarrassed to have your parents, your best friend, or your pastor to come and hear us sing. I don't work places where they serve alcohol. Wow. And a month later, that was August the 15th in 1964. And a month later, he put an ad in Billboard saying that he'd hired us to be the Southern Gentleman and work with him. Well, 1962, that's before we knew him, four things happened. One is that Nat King Cole recorded a song called Rambling Rose. Remember it? Okay. Second one is that Ray Charles recorded a song, I Can't Stop Loving You. Third one is another song called You're the Reason I'm Living. Okay. I've just given you the three songs. Can any of you tell me what's similar with all three? They all started with a big vocal introduction. There was no chunka 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 chunk. It was, you're the reason I'm, it's, I can't stop. It's Rambling Rose. One other thing, the fourth thing that happened in 62, that's when our quartet moved to Nashville in September. And now we got these three songs with big vocal introductions and us. In the next year, Sonny re-signs with Capitol. And the first song he puts out, it's like, what do people want to hear out of me is what he's got to be saying. And he puts out The Minute You're Gone. Anybody want to tell me how that one started? The minute. Then he puts out, who in all this world would I think would be untrue? Whoa, whoa, least of all. Anybody remember? Behind the tear. All started with a big vocal sound. And the radio stations liked it. So Sonny picked us up in September of 64. And his first single after that was, went to a number one. Now we're with him. 1 month later, you're the only world I know. And Sonny, when he was cutting all this with Your Minutes Are Gone and Least of All You and Behind the Tear, is thinking, how do I duplicate this on stage? And I said to him, Sonny, why don't you put us on the record rather than using the Jordanaires and the Anita Kerrs and mixing it up? Why don't you sound on stage like you sound on your records? And he said, you boys think you can cut it? I said, but yeah. So he tried us on the Religious album. Ken Nelson, the man I talked to, head Capitol man, only time he ever sat in on a session, he came to Nashville. I guess this was our chance to try out. And after that, we were on every session Sonny ever did. And so many of them started out with the big vocal sound, and we were able to repeat that on the road shows. Now, talk about crossroads. There's this fork in the road. Archie Campbell, on the Opry, turning down this other entertainer, going with Sonny. He found a pattern, and all of a sudden, his career took off. And for the next 7 years, while I was with him, our quartet was with him. I don't want to make it that personal. If you take Billboard, Cashbox, and Record World, if you just look at all of them, every song that Sonny put out as a single in those 7 years that our quartet was with him went to number one in one of those slots. And it wasn't until 2005 I realized what I've been part of. And I never had an ego about it, but in 2005 a pride started to develop. And it's been a great part of my life for the past, 10 years now.
You sang, but you guys did a lot more than that. You drove the bus.
Well, yeah. When we started with Sonny, things were just, it started out at number one, a number one, a number one. And in early 65, we flew to New York and did the Jimmy Dean show when it was on. I'll never forget that. That was my first start that, we're really in this something. How's this all happening? And then we did the New York State Fair. That was in Syracuse, New York. There were 80,000 people there. And this is when I first realized back then, wow, I'm saying, remember, I don't have a history. I don't know Jim Reeves or Patsy Cline. We're on the Opry and we don't have big eyes for it. They're just people. They're like all of you. They're just people. And on that same show was Lionel Hampton. You remember Frankie Yankovich, my friend in heaven? Frankie Yankovich was on the show. And I said to the other guys in the quartet, whew, Frankie Yankovich, wow, we're really on to something here. Now, here's the funny part. Sonny went in their dressing room, found out this some years later, and talked to Frankie and the band. Right now, the same accordion player that was in the dressing room when Sonny came in and told Frankie Yankovich how he enjoyed his polka music is now the accordion player for Riders in the Sky. Isn't that funny? Sonny had a good... When we started with Sonny, there was five of us in a car. Sonny with his long legs, and it was a Cadillac, but it wasn't a limousine. If Sonny got in the front, the back seat went all the way back. Sonny was, his legs came up to here. Sonny was a long-legged guy. And when he got in the front seat, three of us had to be in the back. So all of it came back like this. And when he got in the back seat, three of us had to get in front. I had to be all the way up like this. And the one thing we like to do, we like to play cards. Now, wait a minute. Canasta. Don't ask. I couldn't play canasta. Two decks. I don't have any idea. We're playing canasta in the car. He had nothing else to do. The last trip we made in the car before we got the bus... Okay, this was in the end of 1965. We were gone 20 days. We played 17 towns. We went out west, Texas, New Mexico. We were gone 20 days, played 17 towns, and drove 10,000 miles. And then the bus came along. Sonny bought a bus out of Schenectady, New York. It had been used for 1 year at the World's Fair in New York City. And sent up Lynn and Glenn Huggins to pick it up and brought it back, had it customized. We thought we had died and gone to heaven. And in the next 7 years, we traveled on that bus 500,000 miles. Our agreement with Sonny was that we'd drive it. So here we are now. We're not only the singers on his sessions. We're not only singing on his shows. We're driving the bus. I'm 3 hours on, 9 hours off. Okay, driving. Never knew we were going to do it. Then we got a sound system. And so I'd set up the sound system and have to run it and get it all set. So we're setting up equipment. We're selling books and we're selling records. And then we're jumping back on the bus and going out and doing the same thing over again. I'm the only guy that kept the journal. Nobody knew that I did. I don't know why anybody didn't know that I did, but I kept up with all the places. Sonny didn't have this. Sonny said, you kept up with where we are. I'm just going to give you from 1969, I'm going to give you our schedule for 1 month. When things start taking off in the business, you go crazy. Remember, Sonny didn't play clubs and stay in one place for 5 days. We played one-nighters. Okay, so here we go. January 1969. The 14th, we did a recording session. The 15th, we did a recording session. Those are three-hour sessions. 16th, we did a recording session. The 17th, we did a recording session. Then we went to Wheeling, West Virginia for the Jamboree, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, then Jackson, Mississippi, then Memphis, Tennessee, then Detroit, Michigan, then Muskegon, Michigan, then Battle Creek, Michigan, then Madison, Wisconsin, Waterloo, Iowa, Rochester, Minnesota, Duluth, Minnesota, St. Louis, Missouri, Indianapolis, Indiana. We did another recording session, Charlotte, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, recording session, Baltimore, Maryland, Norfolk, Virginia, Houston, Texas, Houston, Texas.
Tell me about the California to Miami thing.
When we had the bus, we had and it was Vancouver Island. When we had the bus, we had a Sunday night show in Vancouver Island off the northwest coast of Canada. Sunday night, had to take the ferry to get to the mainland. Our next show was in Miami, Florida. We drove 3,750 miles in 72 hours.
Is that on the interstate?
No. Remember, that's diagonal. You're going this way. You're going, yeah. And then you get there, and there's no business like show business. You know? I thought on one of those sessions, you might enjoy knowing that on the January 17th, that's a Friday of 1969, in one session, we cut Running Bear, Since I Met You Baby, and My Love. They all turned out to be number one country singles for Sonny. Cut them all in one day.
Way to go.
Yeah. And I have no ego about that. If Sonny were here, he wouldn't say any of these things. I can say this about him, and I know it's saying, I have no ego about this. It's just what I did, and I forgot about it for 30 years, but I had the books. You guys will enjoy this if you don't have this. That takes me back to this. When I found this on eBay, I liked it. Jumped up and down, and I brought it. It's a white label Capitol promo record from 1952. It never came out as the blue label. It was never released for sale. And what happened back then, I took it to Sonny's house and I said, and I have two of these, I found two of them. I took it to Sonny's house and I said, look what I found, your first release on Capitol. He said, give that to me. He said, I would have handled that. And I said, you what? He said, oh yeah, back then, Capitol didn't put out a release for sale. We had to pick the artist, the radio stations we thought would play it. I had to package it up and mail it to the radio stations. I would have carried that to the post office and mailed it to whatever station that went to. And if it got enough airplay, then Capitol would have put out the record for sale. He said that never got enough airplay and they never put it out for sale. I said, didn't know that. At your expense? He said, oh, it was all at my expense. And then the second one of those that I found had this in it, which was a release, this record now, second one of those I found. And it had this in it. In the upper half is Sonny's picture, and it says, Capitol introduces Sonny James. It's so nice to make up in Shortcut. And then a little bit about him in the next little last paragraph says, remember, this is 52. He is a member of the church, doesn't smoke or drink in any form. Now here I am with him some 13 years later, 14 years later, and he's telling a promoter, you know I don't do this. In fact, somebody last week sent me a clipping of him in April of 1957 in Ottawa, Canada, and they interviewed him. And however this got in there, it's a big newspaper article. In the article in it, the guy's quoting Sonny as saying, Sonny doesn't drink or smoke. Let me tell you Sonny's part. Sonny didn't have even though you're going to see producer on his records, he produced his own stuff. He wrote, other than a lot of the re-releases of old things that had been pop, that had charted pop, and the stuff that we did, it seemed like people wanted to hear that, and Sonny knew that. That's another story, and I'm going to give that to you in a minute. Sonny wrote so much of his stuff, and he published so much of his stuff, and he promoted himself. When we had days off, he was on the phone with promoters and disc jockeys and the whole like. Sonny, what did I tell you? He reverse promoted. He never called disc jockeys and says, hey, my next release is. He'd call and say, thank you for what you did on the last one. And he never pushed the next one. He sent Christmas cards for 41 years. This last Christmas is the first time he didn't send out Christmas cards. He's 87 now, Sonny is. You might, if you check your records, you're going to see 86. It's been off by a year since whatever. It says 29. He was born in 28. But Sonny's job was writing. He had people that wrote lyrics for him, and he put melodies to them. Publishing, arranging the sessions, okay, doing the road shows, all of that kind of thing. Producing his own records. Ken Nelson said, do it your way, Sonny. He was one busy man, where a lot of artists go in and their producer says, here's the song you're doing. It wasn't ever that way with Sonny. He did all of his own stuff, probably wise, and he had his own guitar sound, which he learned from his sister, Thelma. By the way, sister's name is Thelma, my wife's name is Thelma. Sister's middle name is Lee, his father's middle name is Lee. My middle name is Lee, my three boys' middle names are Lee. I don't know what that means, other than there's always been this kind of connection in there, okay, that kind of connection. Our band was Sonny on guitar, Milo Liggett on bass, who was with Sonny like 15 years, and three singers. I just want you to think of that show. That's him. Sonny playing rhythm and lead, Milo playing bass, and three singers. And if you're wondering about rhythm, I was the first country music tambourine player. You know, is there room? That's me. Yeah, and we picked up a drummer in 69, late 69, picked up Wayne White. So much of what I'm telling you, it's been my digging since 2005. I don't go to Sonny and say, is this so? He doesn't really. He's not boisterous. If you've been around him much. We even tried to get him to sit down and just do an interview, and we record him. He just didn't want to. He doesn't want to toot. And so I'm doing the tooting, okay? You're going to find this really interesting about Sonny. In 1966, in January, RCA Victor signed Charlie Pride to a contract. But they promoted him as Country Charlie Pride, and they never put out his picture. And his first song was Snakes Crawl at Night. That was released in like January of that year. In either case, Sonny immediately singing, because Sonny knew the music he liked, but they weren't doing any old R&B stuff. Country artists weren't picking up. Sonny immediately took us into the recording studio and we recorded Take Good Care of Her, which was a hit by an R&B artist called Adam Wade. Nobody questioned it, but they still didn't know. They didn't question it. Charlie put out another song and it didn't do anything. RCA still was pushing Charlie Pride as Country Charlie Pride, no pictures. And then he put out his third single and it started to hit. And right after that, we were doing a show in Great Falls, Montana, another time in Great Falls. And I remember looking across the stage. We were over here, and forgive me this in this political correctness age, there's a black man standing. And I thought, well, who's that? Black people don't sing country music. And then they introduced Charlie Pride. And he came out with a local band, and he did songs. I'd never even heard of Charlie Pride. Because, again, his songs weren't hitting, but he was Country Charlie Pride. And then they put out a song, and it hit. And that's when RCA put out his picture, and the radio stations went, oh, he's black. And the program director said, oh, but they love his songs. And RCA was really, really smart. But so was Sonny James, because when Charlie hit, Sonny started doing the kind of music that he liked. And in 1969, five out of our next number one singles were all previous R&B songs. Nobody ever talked about it. In fact, nobody, I'm telling you something very few people know. We did Since I Met You Baby, which was a hit by Ivory Joe Hunter. It went to number 12 on Billboard for Ivory Joe Hunter. Next, we did It's Just a Matter of Time by Brooke Benton. That went to number 3 on Billboard 10 years before that. Then we had two other songs that went to number 1. Then we did Endlessly, Brooke Benton. It went to number 12 in 1959 for Brooke. Then we did Empty Arms, Ivory Joe Hunter. It went to number 43 in 1957 for him. Then we did Bright Lights, Big City. That was a hit for Jimmy Reed in 1961. Five out of the next seven songs that Sonny cut were previously done by R&B artists, and nobody ever caught it. No other country artist tried to do it. And we recorded a lot of other stuff. Something Got a Hold on Me, Etta James. Okay, and we did end up doing those three songs that had been cut in 62. We did Rambling Rose. We did You're the Reason I'm Living. And I Can't Stop Loving You. We cut all of those. That's what Sonny heard. He was from Hackleburg and Tupelo's over here. That's what he heard. And until Charlie Pride came along, can I say, he might have been afraid to do them, but Charlie opened the door. He just opened the door. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just amazing? And I don't know of any other artist that tried to do that. I don't know.
Again, Mr. Gary Roble, who, like Sonny James, lives today in Nashville. In the event that Sonny is physically unable to appear at the induction ceremony on Saturday night, August 15th, we've asked Gary to accept the Hall of Fame plaque in Sonny's honor. We'll be right back.
You've got the heart and soul of rock and roll. BRC Radio.
Good guys!
If you're enjoying what you're hearing tonight, there's a lot more of it out there. You can come to meetings that we have. You can come to our record show in August. You can join the club and just get the newsletter. We have monthly meetings at the library in Homewood on Oxmoor Road. We have a yearly record show in August. We have it on the third weekend in August. And this year it will be at the Gardendale Civic Center in Gardendale, Alabama. As far as join the club, you can get in touch with Ray at ray@rockingray.com, or you can send us a letter to P.O. Box 59533, Birmingham, Alabama 35259. And that's the Birmingham Record Collectors. You're on the website right now, birminghamrecord.com. We'd love to have you contact us and be a part of what we're doing.
You're listening to the heart and soul of rock and roll and the Birmingham Record Collectors.
For this portion of the program, we had planned to record an interview by phone with another inductee into the Birmingham Record Collectors Hall of Fame, Mr. Buddy Bowie. Sadly, on July 18th, less than a month prior to his induction, Buddy passed away following a heart attack. We will still honor Buddy for all that he meant to music in Alabama and throughout the world at the induction ceremony. Buddy loved music. He was raised in Dothan, and even as a teenager, he wanted to write songs. His close friend, John Rainey Adkins, would write songs together with him. Adkins went on to be one of the Candymen, Roy Orbison's backup band. I'll tell you about that more later. But it's Adkins playing that strong guitar riff on Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman recording. Here is that opening, John Rainey Adkins playing with Roy Orbison, thanks to his friend, Buddy Bowie. Does Buddy Bowie have to do with Roy Orbison? Everything. It was Buddy Bowie who brought Roy Orbison to Dothan to perform. Adkins and members of the Webb Band, which was also formed by Buddy Bowie, were hired to play behind Orbison. Roy Orbison was so impressed that he wanted them to become his backup band. But Buddy said only if he became their manager. And so Buddy Bowie became Roy Orbison's manager. Another legend from that appearance by Roy Orbison in Dothan. When the plane arrived in Dothan, Roy Orbison inadvertently left his glasses on the plane. He was forced to wear his prescription sunglasses for the Dothan show and for his next gig, quickly following that, a tour with the Beatles. Those sunglasses became his trademark. Buddy also crossed paths with another of the BRC Hall of Fame class of 2015, Sandy Posey. Buddy's first top 40 hit was I Take It Back, sung by Sandy, and it went all the way to number 12 on the Billboard chart in 1967. Also that year, he worked with Dennis Yost and the Classics Four, co-writing their first big hit, Spooky. In each of the next 2 years,
he would duplicate that top five chart success with Stormy and then Traces. Buddy wrote the lyrics for the next eight Classics 4 charting songs. Even today, Spooky and Traces are among the top 50 songs played on the radio. Here are the Classics 4 singing Traces.
Faded photographs, covered now with lines and creases, tickets torn in half, memories in bits and pieces, traces of love long ago. Traces of love, ribbons from her hair, souvenirs of days together, the ring she used to wear, pages from an old love letter, traces of love long ago. Traces of love with me tonight. I close my eyes and say a prayer that in her heart she'll find a trace of love still there somewhere.
Hi, this is Tom Garrett of the Classics 4, and you're listening to the heart and soul of rock and roll with all the gang from BRC and Rocking Ray the DJ, too.
Birmingham's BRC.
Traces was Buddy Bowie's favorite song. He wrote it for his wife, Gloria. He credited her for his success. She was the business mind while Buddy would go off to his little fishing trailer in Eufaula and write songs. In fact, while living in New York, Buddy wrote Georgia Pines because he was homesick for the South. Listen to the words in the tune of Buddy Bowie, Far From Home, as the Candymen perform Georgia Pines.
The trees grow tall where I come from. Their leaves are green and I
Buddy Bowie was a man behind the scenes, not wanting to be a performer. He once said that he was a guitar owner, not a guitar player. He rarely performed in public. But by the 1970s, he was again with three former members of the Candymen, this time in Atlanta, promoting his latest group, the Atlanta Rhythm Section. By 1977, another song credited to Bowie, for at least partial writing credits, was in the top 10. It was the soft rock sound of So Into You by the Atlanta Rhythm Section, a song that would have fit right in with the Classics 4 sound 10 years earlier. In all, Buddy Bowie helped write 17 of the chart hits by the Atlanta Rhythm Section, including two that reached number 7, five songs that made the top 20. He was indeed the man behind the music. His songs have clear and catchy words that make us sing along or just hum in the shower. The world will remember him as a music icon, while his family remembers a generous, optimistic, and loyal man. We will not have a chance to honor him in person, but we do honor his contribution to music in Alabama as a 2015 inductee into the Birmingham Record Collectors Hall of Fame. I'll be right back.
In the magic city of the South,
number one in Alabama,
Birmingham's BRC.
Magic city of the South. Magic City of the South.
Well, that's going to wrap up the special salute to the members of the Birmingham Record Collectors Class of 2015 Hall of Fame members. We thank you for listening. We hope you learned some things about those folks and that you'll join us August 15th when we will have the Shower of Stars concert that will include the induction of these three people into the Birmingham Record Collectors Hall of Fame. Should be an interesting weekend, of course. The big record show starts on Saturday. The record show will go from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. on Saturday, the 15th, and then again on Sunday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. All of this happens at the Gardendale Civic Center, right there on Main Street in Gardendale. Looking ahead to our music shows, we've got coming up telephone songs. We put together some songs that have to do with using the phone, something that has become a requirement in this day and age. Telephone songs, next up on the Heart and Soul of Rock and Roll. And then it's back to school time. As we start to get ready for the fall, we're going to have another back to school songs show, one that I think you will enjoy. And then it's going to be songs by TV personalities. These folks are actors. They're really not singers, are they? Well, you might be surprised as we feature them when they attempted to be singers in addition to actors. And then, as we get into September, Joe's got a really interesting show as we present Sin Songs. I can't wait. Or maybe I could. In any case, lots of great shows coming up for you on the Heart and Soul of Rock and Roll. For now, that's going to wrap this one up. We're going to ask Mr. Bobby to come back in here as Bobby Mizell takes us home with the Heart and Soul Boogie. Bobby? From the Birmingham Record Collectors Club and originating from Birmingham, Alabama, this has been the Heart and Soul of Rock and Roll, a historical educational project presented to preserve this important era of uniquely American music. Please email your request to me at ray@rockingray.com. Comments and suggestions are also welcome. Make your plans now to join us August 15th and 16th for our 31st annual BRC Record and CD show at the Gardendale Civic Center in Gardendale, Alabama. While on our website, explore other features, projects, and informative articles. Thanks to our theme music goes to Birmingham's own Bobby Mizell for the Heart and Soul Boogie. Keep on rocking, Bobby.